Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
So today we're starting with a question that honestly kind of broke my brain when I first read it.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It is. Imagine you're building the most advanced medical predictive tool in human history, right? You're mapping out the genetics of heart disease, of diabetes, of Alzheimer's.
The whole precision medicine revolution.
Exactly. But as you're building this global system, you somehow manage to completely ignore 1/6 of the entire human race.
It sounds impossible, but that is exactly what we've done.
Right. We're talking about the Indian subcontinent, over 1.4 billion people. But if you look at the participants in the massive global genetic studies, the genome-wide association studies, or GWH's people of Indian descent make up less than 2% of the data.
Less than 2%. It's an incredible blind spot.
So how could this change the way we treat patients today? What really happens when you try to apply a medical model built on European DNA to a patient in Mumbai or Chennai?
Well, the short answer is the model breaks. And it breaks catastrophically.
And that catastrophic break is exactly what we're digging into today. We're celebrating the work of an incredible research team, Jing Li, Wei Zhao, and their colleagues.
Right, they've done something really monumental here.
Today we celebrate their work, which has fundamentally advanced our understanding of South Asian genomics. They built a massive database called ACSI-DAD, and their paper proves just how dangerous this genetic blind spot has become.
Yeah, we are moving away from this idea of, you know, one size fits all medicine.
Which is great in theory.
Right, in theory. Precision healthcare relies on these polygenic architectures. Basically, understanding how thousands of tiny genetic variants add up to cause a disease.
But those variants aren't the same everywhere.
Exactly. If our foundational data is overwhelmingly European, we are missing the unique allele frequencies, the specific structural variants that exist in the Indian population. So when we try to transfer those clinical models over,
they just fail.
They fail. It's not just that we need more diverse representation for the sake of it. It's a hard mathematical flaw in how we predict global health outcomes.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand why this matters to you, to the future of global healthcare, we have to look at the history of India itself.
Yeah, the demographic history is fascinating.
It's not just one big homogenous group of 1.4 billion people, is it?
Not at all. Anthropologically, India is made up of over 4,500 distinct groups.
4,500?
Yeah. And in genetic databases, we tend to lump continents together into these broad superpopulations, like, oh, here's the South Asian group.
Just mathematically smoothing out all the interesting parts.
Exactly. But doing that completely obscures the reality on the ground. The Indian population actually descends from this complex mixing of two very divergent ancestral lineages.
Right. The paper calls them the ancestral North Indians, or ANI. And the ancestral South Indians, ASI.
Right, so the ANI component shares a deep evolutionary history with people in Central Asia, the Middle East, and Europe.
Kind of a broad West Eurasian lineage.
Yeah, groups that migrated into the subcontinent over thousands of years. But the other group, the ASI.
This is where it gets really unique.
It is. The ASI lineage doesn't share recent common ancestry with any population outside the subcontinent. The closest distant relative researchers can find outside mainland India is actually the indigenous people of the Andaman Islands.
Wow. So modern India is this massive gradient, a kind of admixture between those two very different lineages.
Yes, but that's just the first layer of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. The second layer is how those 4,500 groups actually interacted, or rather didn't interact over the last few thousand years.
You're talking about endogamy.
Right, strict endogamy. The practice of marrying only within a very specific local or social group, often combined with consanguinity, which is marriage between closer relatives.
And when a group does that for hundreds of generations,
you get what we call a founder event, or a genetic bottleneck.
So a small group breaks off, they only reproduce within that group, and whatever genetic quirks those original founders had,
they get locked in.
Yeah.
And magnified.
But usually when we hear about founder populations in genetics, we think of like Ashkenazi Jews or the Finnish population, right?
Exactly. And those groups are heavily studied because it's so much easier to find rare disease-causing mutations in an isolated group.
But the researchers point out that the founder events in India are actually way more extreme than the ones in Finland.
Much more extreme, and there are thousands of them happening simultaneously on a densely populated mainland.
So if a specific Say, highly dangerous mutation exists in a massive mixed population like Europe. It might be incredibly rare, like 1 in 1,000,000.
Right, you'd have to sequence a whole country to find it.
But in one of these endogamous Indian groups,
that exact same mutation might have amplified to a frequency of 1 in 50.
It acts like a massive genetic magnifying glass.
That's a perfect way to put it. It increases our statistical power to map novel disease variants. But
no one's looking through the magnifying glass.
Exactly. Because they make up less than 2% of the GWA's data, we are missing these amplified signals completely.
Which means we aren't just failing to help those specific groups in India. We're missing out on discovering fundamental biological pathways that could lead to new drugs for everyone.
We are leaving critical medical knowledge on the table.
So enter Zheng Li, Wei Zhao, and their team. They decided to finally build a map, a real high-resolution benchmark for the Indian genome.
And the methodology they use for the ELISADAD cohort is just, it's the gold standard.
Let's get into that, because the way they selected their participants is super strategic. They used 2,680 people from the longitudinal aging study in India.
From 18 different states and union territories, that geographical spread is crucial.
Yeah, they didn't just test a bunch of college students in one city. They specifically chose adults age 60 and older. Why older adults?
Because if you're trying to establish a baseline for complex diseases, things like dementia, cardiovascular disease, you want a cohort that has already lived past the typical onset age for those conditions. It gives you an incredibly rich phenotypic baseline.
That makes total sense. And they compare this to older data sets like the 1000 Genomes Project.
Right, which only had about 489 South Asians.
And weren't a lot of those people expatriates, like people living in Texas or the UK?
Yeah, exactly. Small, localized groups. You cannot capture the diversity of 18 Indian states by sampling 100 people in Houston.
So they have the right people. Now, how do they read the DNA? Because this is where the tech gets intense.
Yeah.
They use 30x whole genome sequencing.
Right, WGS. This is a massive leap from the old way of doing things.
The old way being microarrays.
Yeah. A microarray is kind of like reading a summary of a book. It checks a few hundred thousand predetermined spots across the genome. It's sparse.
But whole genome sequencing is reading every single letter. All 3 billion base pairs?
Every letter. And the 30x part is really the key here.
Because it means they read the entire genome 30 times over, right?
Exactly. Sequencing machines make mistakes. If a machine reads a piece of DNA once and sees a weird mutation, you don't know if that's a real biological mutation or just a typo from the machine.
But if you read it 30 times,
and you see that same mutation 15 times, mathematically, you have near absolute certainty that it's a real variant.
Which let them be incredibly ruthless with their quality control. They threw out anything that looked even slightly ambiguous, right?
Yeah, they filtered out low complexity regions, areas where DNA repeats a lot and confuses the machines, and they only kept biallelic variants.
Meaning spots where only two versions of that gene exist in the population.
Right. They prioritized absolute computational reliability, and they still ended up with over 71 million highly validated variants.
71 million, just a pristine foundational benchmark.
But having a list of variants is just step one. The real magic of this study is how they looked at the relationships between those variants.
Okay, yes. This is the concept of linkage disequilibrium, or LD. This took me a minute to wrap my head around, but it is so crucial.
It is arguably the most vital concept in statistical genetics.
So let's break it down for the listener. LD is essentially the idea that our DNA isn't just a random soup of genes, it's organized into neighborhoods.
Or blocks, yeah. Over thousands of years of human evolution, our chromosomes swap pieces of DNA, recombination.
Like shuffling a deck of cards.
Exactly. But genes that sit right next to each other on the chromosome are physically attached. They're much less likely to get split up during that shuffle.
So they travel together through generations, like train cars bolted together.
Right. They are inherited as a package deal. We call that a haplotype or an LD block.
And this is how GWS actually works, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you know that a completely harmless, easy to find genetic marker is bolted to the same train car as a super rare disease causing gene,
you don't even need to look for the disease gene. You just scan the patient for the harmless marker. It acts as a proxy, a tag.
But, and here's the massive catch, this whole shortcut only works if the train cars are bolted together in the exact same way for everyone.
Which they absolutely are not.
Right. So the researchers use these tools, LDetect and BigLD, to map out the specific genetic neighborhoods for the Indian population. And when they compared the macroscale blocks across the world, It essentially printed out a map of human evolution.
It really did. They compared the Laysidad data to African, European, East Asian, and other South Asian superpopulations.
And the African populations had the most blocks, over 1,600, and the smallest average length, about 1.7 million base pairs.
Which perfectly aligns with the out-of-Africa evolutionary timeline.
Because African populations have the oldest ancestral lineages.
Yes, their genomes have been shuffling for thousands of extra generations, more time to chop up those blocks.
But when humans migrated out of Africa, they went through a bottleneck. It kind of reset the train cars into these longer, unbroken blocks.
Exactly. So the Laysidad cohort, at a broad scale, matched that. They averaged about 2.2 million base pairs.
Which was similar to the older 1,000 genome South Asian data. But then they zoomed in. They used Big LD for the fine-scale blocks.
And that's where the differences really popped out.
Yeah, the median block size for Laysidad was 5.9 kilobases, but the older database was 5.4 kilobases.
Now, 500 base pairs might not sound like a lot when you're dealing with 3 billion.
Right, it sounds tiny.
But at this fine-scale resolution, it's an enormous structural divergence. It means the localized architecture across these 18 Indian states is much tighter than what we saw in the old datasets.
So if a European algorithm thinks the tagging marker is inside a 5.4 kilobase block, but the Indian patient's actual biology is a 5.9 kilobase block.
The tag doesn't point to the disease anymore. The algorithm breaks.
And it gets even crazier when you look inside India. Because the researchers didn't just stop at the border. They split the 2,680 people into three groups based on that north-south ancestry climb we talked about.
Right. They had a high percentage ANI group in the north, a low percentage ANI group in the south, and an out-of-Klein group in the east, which has some East Asian genetic influence.
And they calculated this thing called a viral D score.
Yeah, it calculates the absolute difference between the localized LD blocks of two populations.
And what they found is that a person in northern India has a mathematically distinct genetic neighborhood structure from a person in southern India.
Entirely distinct. And this leads us to the most clinically alarming part of the whole paper.
The polygenic risk score experiment, the PRS.
This is where the real-world danger becomes undeniable.
Right. A PRS is basically an algorithm that looks at thousands of your genetic variants and spits out your risk for a disease.
But the weights in that algorithm, the math deciding how important each variant is, those are almost all derived from European GWA data.
So they tested it. They took the European algorithms for predicting height and BMI, and they ran them on the three Indian subpopulations.
And the predictive accuracy just collapsed.
The numbers are staggering. In Europe, the PRS for height is incredibly accurate. It has an R-squared of 44.7%.
Very robust.
But when they applied that exact same European math to the high ANI group in northern India, the group closest to Europeans ancestrally, the accuracy dropped to 17%.
And that was the best case scenario.
Right. In the low ANI group in the south, it dropped to 14%. And for the out-of-Klein group in the east, it fell to 10%.
The algorithm lost nearly 80% of its predictive power just by crossing a geographic boundary.
So height is just a benchmark. But think about what this means for a patient in an actual hospital. If a doctor in Kolkata uses a European-based PRS to predict a patient's risk for heart disease,
the prediction is basically useless. At 10% accuracy, you are going to get massive rates of false negatives for people who are actually high risk and false positives for perfectly healthy people.
It's mathematically unjustifiable to use these tools in South Asia right now.
Exactly. And the only way to fix it is to build the exact kind of massive, localized lookup table that Laysidad provides.
Which brings us to the sheer scale of what they actually found when they built it. The Laysidad reference panel contains 69.5 million variants.
It's a staggering amount of data.
When you compare that to the older 1,000 genomes panel, it's a 170% increase. Compared to the top ELD panel, it's a 213% increase.
They essentially turned the lights on in a room that had been dark for decades.
But it's not just the total number, it's the kind of variants they found. Most of these new discoveries were extremely rare variants, right?
Yeah, variants with a minor allele frequency of less than 1%.
Why are rare variants so important?
Because common variants usually only have tiny, subtle effects on your health. But rare variants, they often have massive direct impacts. They can point us straight to critical biological pathways.
But to find something that rare, you just need a lot of people.
It's pure statistical power. The old databases failed because they only had 400 or 500 people. If a mutation exists in 0.1% of the population, you are never going to see it in a room of 500 people.
But test 2,680 people across 18 states, and suddenly those invisible variants pop into view.
And they proved it works immediately. When they built a new polygenic risk score using the LSI-DAD data, the predictive accuracy for South Asians shot right back up.
The math works when the map actually matches the territory.
Exactly. But they didn't stop there. They went on to solve one of the biggest logistical headaches in all of genetics.
Genotype imputation.
Yeah.
Let's break this down because it is essentially biological autocorrect.
That's a great analogy.
Because, as we said earlier, doing 30x whole genome sequencing for every single patient is just way too expensive right now. So most big biobanks still use the cheap microarrays that only scan a few hundred thousand spots.
The sparse data.
Right. So researchers use genotype imputation. It's an algorithm that looks at your sparse array data, compares it to a high-resolution reference panel, and guesses what the missing millions of variants are.
It infers the blanks based on those linkage disequilibrium blocks we talked about earlier.
But again, if the reference dictionary you're using to fill in the blanks is European, it's going to misspell all the Indian genetic words.
The hidden Markov models will confidently fill in the blanks with completely wrong data.
So the researchers tested LSI-DAD as an imputation reference dictionary against two of the best existing panels, TopMed and Genome Asia Pilot, or GSPI.
And the results were just a blowout.
For standard variants, LSI-DAD improved imputation accuracy by 38% over TopMed and 27% over GSPI.
And when they looked at those ultra-rare variants?
This blew my mind. LSI-DAD successfully imputed over 61.8 million rare variants. That is a 940% increase in accuracy over GSPI.
A nearly tenfold increase in our ability to computationally find rare, potentially disease-causing mutations using cheap array data.
But they were really smart about this. They didn't just say, our database is the best, throw the others away. They used a technique called meta-imputation.
Yes. Genomic data sets are additive. Why use one dictionary when you can use three?
Right. They combined LSI-DAD, TopMed, and GSPI into this massive superpanel.
It requires a massive amount of computational power to harmonize all that, but the payoff is incredible. For the absolute rarest variants, meta-imputation increased accuracy by up to 107%.
It's just undeniable proof that you have to synthesize local data sets with global ones.
But there is one final piece of data in this imputation section that we really need to highlight because it shows just how insidious algorithmic bias can be.
Yes, the state-by-state consistency check.
Right. They went back and looked at how well the old TopMed panel performed at imputing genomes for people from different specific states in India.
And they found a massive bias. TopMed's accuracy heavily correlated an R squared of 0.77 with the state's percentage of ancestral North Indian lineage.
Meaning the more your DNA resembled a European's, the better the TopMed algorithm worked for you.
So if you lived in the North, it worked okay.
Yeah.
But if you lived in the South or the East, where the ASI component is higher, the algorithm just failed.
It is the literal manifestation of systemic bias encoded into a mathematical model. Anyone relying on TopMed for Indian genetics over the last 10 years was getting bad data for Southern and Eastern populations.
But LSI-DAD completely neutralizes that bias because it's sampled evenly across the whole country. It democratized the accuracy.
Exactly. It's a structural correction to a historical oversight.
Which brings us to the ultimate takeaway here. What does this mean for the future? By finding millions of rare variants and fixing this algorithmic bias, these researchers have paved the way for real precision medicine for 1.4 billion people.
We can finally stop trying to copy-paste European genetics onto the rest of the world.
But I want to leave you with one final kind of wild thought.
Yeah.
The researchers achieved that 940% increase in accuracy and found nearly 44 million completely new genetic variants.
Yeah.
And they did all of that by sequencing just 2,680 people.
Just a fraction of a fraction.
Exactly. India has over 4,500 distinct isolated groups. If this one study of fewer than 3,000 people uncovered 44 million novel variants, what incredible biological mechanisms, what unique disease resistances or potential cures are still hiding out there in the thousands of groups we haven't even begun to look at.
It's an incredible frontier. The true era of genetic discovery in the subcontinent is really just beginning.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Picture stands clear.